Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Within our Facebook groups, I'm always asked questions. And in particular, right now, I'm thinking about in our clinician groups. So we've got mastermind levels, we've got our membership, we've got places all over the place. And I generally pull questions from all of these different areas and I consolidate them and I go live once or twice a week to try to answer those questions, to try to understand what's behind them. And this week, there was a question that sort of stopped me in my tracks, not because it isn't a topic that hasn't been addressed before, not because this is a new idea, but because you could feel the emotion behind it. And the question that I received was, is there any hope as an ND in Ontario that I will ever make more than $100,000 a year by playing by the rules? There was so much wrapped into that. And what we're going to do for the next 20 minutes or so is we're going to break that apart. We're going to do what I was trained to do as a naturopathic doctor and start to uncover the root cause of what's really behind that question. What does that mean on a big picture level? What does it mean on the ground? And what does really the last 6 years of me working with clinicians, helping them to build out their businesses, what have I learned about the model that we are trying to deploy? This is episode 212 of the Anthropology Podcast. And what we're talking about today are the problems, the challenges, and the broken elements of delivering naturopathic, functional medicine, or strategic care in a preventative context. Now, I know that not all of you who listen to this podcast are clinicians, and here's what I'm going to encourage you to view this through if you want to hang out for this discussion. And that is this overarching idea that if we are going to have a business, we need to be able to craft an offer for our customers that they actually want. And I think one of the challenges we have now reached, in particular with respect to naturopathic medicine, but anyone delivering any type of strategic care, that could be Ayurvedic, that could be traditional Chinese medicine, that could be functional medicine, it is not just reserved for naturopathy, is that we have been taught and taken for granted a particular model of delivering care for so long that we actually have never stopped to ask whether or not it's the best way forward. What is the opportunity cost of continuing to pursue a model of care without asking whether or not it is what patients are actually looking for? Now, what am I talking about here? What I'm talking about is that traditional one-on-one care model. And I also want to be clear, what I am not going to do is present all sorts of different ways that we can access patients if you were to drop your license. Anyone who hangs out with me knows that I'm a huge fan of having your cake and eating it too. The problem is the cake we have been trying to eat, the thing we have been trying to build a business around, I believe fundamentally at its core is broken. See, I went through school and I was very much taught that one-on-one care was the only way to work with patients. There were some people experimenting with maybe running groups or having an online program, but to them, that was just a new way of crafting an additional revenue stream. The gold standard of how we were going to get people well was by seeing them one-on-one in our office. Our massive value proposition as a practitioner was that we did this huge intake, that we asked you more questions than anyone has ever asked you before. And because the patients we had in our office appeared to enjoy the opportunity to talk about themselves and their story and their history, we took that as evidence that this was the best way to work with people moving forward. But what if this is the best way to only work with one type of patient? What if all the people who have acknowledged in all the surveys we've put out as an industry who said, yes, I'd love to see a naturopathic doctor. Yes, I'd love to see a functional medicine practitioner. What if we also asked them how they felt about the idea of coming to see someone one-on-one in practice? Because my experience when I start to ask my patients about that is that wasn't actually the offer they were hoping for. They only came to see me by default in my office because I had nothing else available to them. See, the reality is there are huge numbers of people who could be assisted by our model of care, by our way of thinking, and they aren't walking through the door. They're not walking through the door because our care is too expensive. Some are, but it's actually a smaller percentage than we would think. They're not walking through the door because the model that we are delivering is not conducive to what they want in their lifestyle. This model that so many of us are taught was to come in, do our big intake, give them some type of prescription, ask them to come back, update us on their symptoms, change up their prescription, tell them when to come back, update their prescription, tell them when to come back. There's nothing inspiring. There is nothing transformational. Mostly what we end up doing with our patients is simply delivering to them information. Most patients come in for this big expansive intake. We understand what is going on with their health, but their level of health acumen, the level of information they don't have, means that they're not ready for our sophisticated protocol. It means that there are fundamentals that need to be addressed. And so rather than leveraging this incredible ability or opportunity to hear about my strategy, what I spend the first 5 or 6 visits doing is charging them a lot of information, a lot of money for information. My value proposition as a practitioner is not to be a teacher in my office over and over again. If I have the skills to inspire and teach, that will only make me more effective. But it is not a good use of someone's insurance money, someone's hard-earned money, or someone's time to sit across from me one-on-one and learn the fundamentals of health. And yet so many of our patients, so many of the people who came through my office door and said, I've tried naturopathic medicine, it didn't work for me, simply spent 7 or 8 visits with a practitioner being delivered a menial prescription and a ton of information. See, I believe we help more people not by lowering our prices, but by innovating our offer. And one of the things that I hope everyone can recognize so far in the discussion is that maybe there's a more efficient way of delivering information. Maybe there's a smarter way, a less expensive way for us to deliver information so we can focus on what we should be doing, which is delivering strategy. This transactional model of care came out of, in part, our training. It also came out of the model that inspired the one-on-one visit, which is the pathogenic model of care. This is how medicine has been practiced for hundreds of years. We have a pathogenic model of care because patients would present and that doctor had to do a unique workup for that patient for the pathology. But you see, the thing is after being in practice for 12 years, what I realized about the root cause of what's going on in someone's health is that it is multifactorial. It's rarely caused by one particular pathogen. It's caused by a series of things, many of which are not pathogenic, but biopsychosocial in their nature. They are a function of lifestyle. They are a function of genetics and epigenetics. They are a function of exposure. They are a function of repetitive habits. They are a function of one's psychology. It's not one factor I'm addressing. It's multiple factors, which means the model of care that I am leveraging in order to get someone well should match the development of disease. This other way of looking at it, this other model, this is called a biopsychosocial model of care. And guess what? It isn't born out of the one-on-one visit to manage pathology. It is born out of the acknowledgement that humans are multifactorial, that a human's health is really because of one element. It's because of a series of elements. So at its very core, I contend that for most of our patients, in most of the populations that we serve, this pathogenic model of care is mismatched to the root cause of where their health has deviated in the first place. The second piece of our current model that we need to acknowledge is the delivery of transformational care, not transactional care. This idea of having a symptom and matching a set of supplements or protocols and having them come back and reassessing where they're at and having them come back and reassessing where they're at feels like a series of sales calls to our patients. They don't know where they're going. They don't know why they're doing it. And they don't have a broader context of how this relates to the thing that brought them in the door in the first place. There's an entirely different methodology to delivering transformational versus transactional care. The other beautiful thing about stepping into a role where we're delivering transformation and not transaction is no longer are we selling someone our time, a block of time to simply acquire a new prescription. What we're doing now is we're giving them access to our strategic way of thinking, which moves them forward. It enables us to start to step out of this paradigm of trading time for money. Why? Because we're no longer selling time. We are now selling strategy. So all of this underscores a third piece that we need to acknowledge as one-on-one practitioners. What is our unique selling proposition? What does differentiate us from Dr. Google? It's not our information. In fact, the information I learned in school has shifted entirely over the course of my time in practice. But what Google cannot replicate is my capacity to take information, apply it to my understanding of the body, and create an individualized strategy for a patient. And what's so cool about moving from a model where I share information with patients to a model where I deliver strategy with patients is that I'm able to move the needle on their care. I'm able to find ways of scaling my intellectual property. I move from a model of transaction to transformation. And what it also opens up are new opportunities to package out different offers that match different stages of a patient's evolution. See, I would have patients who would come into my office and I would ask them, my gosh, like you've had awful IBS for the last 2 years, or you've been dealing with a, you know, chronic fatigue or chronic infections or whatever it was that came through the door. What took so long before you were willing to come and see me? And when it wasn't a matter of, well, I was looking for a different way to work with you, most people's answers were either they didn't know what I did. They didn't know what this understanding or this element of treating the root cause was all about. Or, listen to this, they didn't want to have to disclose the level of and have the level of intimacy with me as a practitioner that they knew would be necessary for their caring. They weren't ready. They weren't ready to talk about the fact that they drank a bit too much alcohol at night. They weren't ready for the risk that I was going to take away their gluten. They didn't want me to potentially stop them from drinking coffee. They didn't want to talk about that abortion that they had. They didn't want to tell me about their bowel movements. They wanted an opportunity to get glimpses and have access to a naturopathic way of thinking without the risk of sitting in my office. And so the question came up to me, are there ways for us to be able to move the needle on someone's care without them having to come through our office doors? Are there ways that we can start to move the needle for people's health without putting them further at risk? And as I explored this question, what I really started to realize is that there are four stages of readiness that patients move through on their journey to health. So I'm not talking about those acute patients who show up at Emerge. I'm not talking about a woman in labor. I'm talking about people who've had something chronically and they want to move the needle. They want to improve it. They are looking for lack of a better term, an alternative to simply being on pharmaceuticals for their whole life. There are a series of stages, and no matter what your niche or your focus, we see patients moving through these in a consistent manner. And the irony of it is that for most functional medicine practitioners, most naturopathic doctors, we've only addressed one of the four stages. I used to wonder early in my career when I would stand up and I would give a talk to a room and I knew the information was great and I knew that I gave a compelling talk, why only 3 or 4 people of 65 wanted to come forward and learn more about booking an appointment? Why did it take so long from standing in front of a room of people for people to eventually come in? When I was still a student in naturopathic college, what we realized is that the average sales cycle for most patients was about 18 months. An 18-month sales cycle in any other industry would absolutely bankrupt the business. So what is happening for people in between? Are they not sick enough to have to come through our door? Have they not been convinced enough? How much do we need to spend on marketing to teach people the benefits of one-on-one care? Well, I don't think this is a marketing question. I don't think this is because we're not listed in enough listings. It's not because we don't have access to testimonials in certain jurisdictions. It's not because we can't bulk fee. It's because we are not crafting more than one offer for patients. And we're definitely not crafting offers that match the stages of readiness. See, if a chocolate bar company only made one flavor of chocolate, they might feel successful because everyone loves their version of a Mars bar. But when they start to make 3 or 4 different types of chocolate bars, what they realize is the market was way bigger than they ever thought possible. So I'm talking about the stages of readiness of a practitioner, I want to take you through them because as we start to understand the stages, we start to understand how we have actually fallen short in providing health consumers what they are looking for. What we realize when we can diversify our offer, we can actually reach people with diversified incomes. When we can reach people with diversified incomes, we can add diversity to our patient base. And when we can add more than one offer to our ecosystem in our business, it means that we actually now have a business that's not all predicated on one single product. One single product where if you fall sick, you have no income. One single product where if you want to have a baby, you are picking between whether or not you're going to be present with your baby at home or you're going to go in to earn an income to pay for your overhead. One single model, all built on the assumption that this was the best and only way to deliver care. And I firmly believe that the reason that this individual asked the question, is there ever a possibility that I can make more than 6 figures as an ND in Ontario without bending the rules? That question stems from the fact that we have been teaching everyone to move and deliver one model of care, and all we ever do is update the tactics to scale and push more people into a model that I argue isn't working and only addresses the needs of a very small percentage of our population. So let's walk through this. What are these 4 stages of readiness, and what are the types of things that we can deliver to these individuals? The first stage of readiness I call the aspirational stage. This is that stage where people, for some reason, maybe it was a friend, maybe it was an Instagram post, maybe it was a magazine at the hairdresser, I don't know. They learned something compelling about health. They learned for the first time there was something that they could do to deal with their chronic digestive issues or their low back pain or their muscle cramps or whatever it happened to be. It was likely some simple post or benign article with generic advice. But what it did for people for the very first time in their lives is it planted the seed that they themselves would be capable of moving the needle on their own health. This is that aspirational phase where it's super fun and to buy a new water bottle and buy all the books or get on people's mailing lists. What's happening in the aspirational phase is a minimal financial investment in one's health, but a deep interest and curiosity around what it might mean to pursue and look at the alternatives. You are not going to sell people things in this stage. When I was giving talks early in my career, tons of these people were coming to my talks. They weren't going to buy. They were curious. The missed opportunity for me when I was giving these talks, when I was giving away free information, was to not put them onto my mailing list, was not to find some way of pulling them closer into my community. I know a lot of practitioners are worried about giving away information for free. Don't worry about it. thousands and thousands and thousands and millions of people are giving it away for free already on Google. By you not doing it, the only thing that's happening is the missed opportunity of moving someone into your ecosystem, moving someone into the opportunity of hearing your unique take and your unique perspective. My training and my information was not dissimilar to anyone else, but the way I interpreted it, the way that I leveraged it for the patient populations that I wanted to work with, that was my secret sauce. So that first stage, that aspirational stage, it is not about selling. What it is about is auditioning. It's about the opportunity to talk to your ideal client, to learn more about what they need, about delivering them a high degree of value so they want to take the most critical step forward, which is actually to become part of your community, to actually jump onto your mailing list. In fact, the mailing list is the valuable piece that you're building at the end of your career. The second phase of that patient journey is called the empowerment phase, also known as the DIY phase. Well, what happens here is something that we have always begrudged as practitioners. And this is where patients want to do it all on their own. They are Googling their symptoms. They are trying the Whole 30. The next week they are keto, and then they are vegan, and then they're in the master cleanse, and then they're clearing out their candida, and then they're looking at molds. Whatever, like they're all in and they're all over the place. But what are they doing? They are experiencing the information. They're doing exactly what we did at the beginning of our careers. They're experimenting and trying it out. And this, for many of them, is the very first time they have taken action or made an investment in their health and realized that they could move the needle. And realize that better health outcomes were not predicated on a drug. This isn't a phase of a patient's journey that we should begrudge. This is a phase that we should be participating in. In the last year, there has been a 543% increase in the delivery of health courses online. Not $10,000 health courses, easily accessible health courses, less than $399 health courses. Why is this so important? Because I suspect that 90% of the courses that flooded the market in the last year were by people who were less credentialed than you. There is a massive opportunity for us to start to address the information gap as it pertains to health. It is not your job to deliver information in your one-on-one visits. It's your job to deliver strategy. When you deliver information and information alone in those one-on-one visits, trying to bring your patients up to speed, you are charging them a ton of money for something they could otherwise access online for free. Or for a minimal investment. What if you were to create a simple online program that taught your patients everything they need to know for them to be successful when they finally walk through your door? The third phase that a patient moves through, in some cases, is the strategy phase. This is where they've tried the DIY things. They've tried all the home candida kits. They have created their own garlic suppositories. They've created concoctions. They've done some crazy stuff. In some cases, they've done stuff that you don't even know about. The problem is that they're trying all of these things and they're not moving the needle. See, when you build an effective course that someone can leverage to move the needle on their health, you're not prescribing individualized care, you're delivering information. At the end of that information, when you are a smart clinician, you can ask the right questions to know whether or not someone's in a state of health or whether or not they would be a good candidate for strategic care. See, that third phase of the journey, strategic care, that's where you shine. That's where the $100,000 investment in schooling really has a place, because Google can't replace you. Artificial intelligence can't replace you. Most primary care practitioners can't replace you. This is your secret sauce. This is where you go in and you address the root cause of the problem. And imagine you could go in and you could just start working your magic. It's not really magic. I get that. This is where you start to deliver your strategy. Imagine they already knew how to take gluten out of their diet. They already knew why dairy was inflammatory. They already had the habit of drinking 2.5 liters of water a day. They were already eating and increased their vegetable content by 40%. You don't have to teach them that, and you don't have to charge them for that. You can just start deploying your strategy right from the get-go. Imagine the outcomes you would be able to deliver. See, when people come in for strategic care, and where strategic care really worked is when we deploy a strategy for them. They come in and they say, I would like to deal with my chronic candida. We teach them and paint the picture as to what the root cause of the problem is. And we show them the journey of transformation. We show them how we're going to address gut health. We show them how we're going to address endocrine disruption because it's changing the environment that enables the candida to continue to flourish. We show them how we are then, if they want to, going to be able to continue to build off those benefits and increase their energy because we're going to focus on mitochondrial health. We're going to execute on that plan over and over again because we work with a core group of patients. We're going to define our methodology. We're going to get clear on the transformation we can deliver for patients. We're going to get them well. But once we get patients well, it takes us to our fourth phase of the journey. What we did historically, what we learned is let's transact with that patient until they're feeling better. And then let's find a reason to book them back in. Let's book them in for a PAP or a physical in a year from now. But see, here's the problem. No one wants to come back for those things. They can access those things somewhere else. Here's the other problem is what caused it, the issue in the first place, were actually all the biopsychosocial factors that they were living in. And when we get someone well and we re-release them to their life where they have their job and they have their patterns for dealing with illness and they have their route at the grocery store and they have the stories about food from their family of origin, then what happens is they go back to all of those other lifestyles. And 18 months later, they come back through our door, not for a physical exam, but because their symptoms are right back where they started. It is not disingenuous, in my opinion, to not only get someone well, but to give them the tools to keep them well. I don't know about you, but I have never achieved my maximum state of health. In fact, once I discovered what health could really be, it's been an ongoing source of growth. I am always and continuing to learn new things, just as my body is always and continuing to change. The fourth phase of that patient ascension journey is something called the growth phase. This is that phase that happens on the backside of the outcome they came to you to deliver. This is where you now have a captive audience who is forever grateful that you were able to give them back their health. And what they really want from you, although in some cases they can't articulate it, is for you to help them keep it. You gave them health, and now you have an opportunity to let them keep it. This growth phase is another area where we have traditionally not acknowledged. This is where group programming, this is where memberships, this is where a speaker series, this is where any number of different models can be deployed within your practice so that you are building off the biopsychosocial factors that got them unwell in the first place. In the last year, we've seen a tremendous amount of change in how we deliver care. Many people feel that the backside, I'm going to call it the era of COVID, that the number one opportunity is that people are going to have this eye-opening experience and they're going to want health for the first time. I actually don't think that's true. You know, we've been watching patients who've experienced cardiovascular events for, gosh, we've been documenting this for almost 100 years. And what we know is there is a window, a six-week window on the backside of a cardiovascular event where a patient is most compliant and interested in addressing the lifestyle causes that got them there in the first place. If you try to intervene past those 6 weeks, every single day past the end of those 6 weeks that you delay, you decrease the compliance of patients. I don't think this is going to meaningfully shift people's desire for health. But what I do think has shifted in the last year, and where I believe the biggest opportunity exists, is that what we have done is we have shifted patients' belief systems around what needs to be in place for them to get well. We have shifted a group of patients who would never have conceived that it'd be possible to actually visit a doctor online, and not just visit them online, but get a prescription and get a meaningful outcome. We have enabled them to believe that something other than one-on-one care in a patient's office is valuable and possible. The most expensive thing about shifting a model of care is the marketing to get patients to believe that another way of doing it is possible. And that marketing has been done for you. It's why I believe that having a hybrid practice that enables you to reach patients virtually and in person, I believe that right now is the most important time in the history of many of our respective professions to ensure that we are deploying that tactic. Virtual care is not a new business model. What it is a new model of care, and I believe it is the gateway to enabling patients to believe that care can be delivered in other forums, in other models. When you understand the four stages of readiness that patients move through, you will understand that in each of those stages, there are four, five, six, or seven different tactics, different care models that we could use and leverage to get people well. And what happens is as patients move through those four stages in our unique system of care with our unique way of doing it, what we do is we're developing a healing system. What we've done is we're developing our own intellectual property. And as you move through your career and as you get better at that, the most valuable thing that you have accrued over your time of working with patients is not your patient list or the files. It's your intellectual property. There's only one way to repackage and sell those files, which in any other circumstance would just be selling a mailing list. But in this case, when we start to build on our IP, when we start to have systems that we know move the needle for patients, now we have something infinitely more valuable, something that can be packaged, something that can be taught, and something that can be distributed to new patients down the road that can be built upon for better outcomes. I believe that if we step away from a model of care predicated on the fixing of pathology, and acknowledge the need for a model of care that addresses the biopsychosocial factors that are present in most of our patients' lives, we are going to have an opportunity to deploy our respective systems of medicine and reach more people than we ever thought possible. And what I also think will take place at the exact same time is that as practitioners, not only will you get out of this model of simply sharing yourself with people to get them well, but we'll start to leverage the investment in your education. We'll start to leverage your intellectual property. We'll start to leverage your time. We'll start to move you closer to freedom. We'll start to reduce the risk in your business because you'll have more than one offer. One-on-one care is not getting less expensive. It's getting more expensive every single day. Until we acknowledge that the current model in which most of us are practicing does not provide people with more freedom, does not enable us to scale impact, does not enable us to scale income, then sadly, my answer to that question that I got this week is no. I don't believe that if we hold ourselves in the box in which we are currently pushing, I don't believe we are going to have practitioners who are compensated the way they need to be without destroying their own health in the process. And the naturopathic doctor in me, the person who values health above all else, is absolutely determined not to see that happen. I don't have anything I am selling. I am simply acknowledging my frustration with the model that exists on the table and my unwavering willingness to commit to disrupting the way we have always done it, playing by the rules, not risking anyone's license, and most importantly, not risking patient outcomes, but committed to getting outside the box of how we've always done it in the name of progress, in the name of reaching more people, in the name of scaling our systems of medicine to reach more people and rendering them more sustainable for us. We talk about these pieces inside our practitioner Facebook groups, our main one being our Clinician Business Labs Facebook groups. And if this is of interest in any way, we have linked that in our show notes. You can find it in my bio on Instagram. You can come and hang out with us for free as we start to discuss these models and as we start to disrupt them, as we talk to some of those innovative people in healthcare about their vision on how we can start to move some of these elements forward. If you want to change your life, you need to change the way you are thinking about your life. If you want to change your practice, you need to change the way you practice. And if we want to reach more people without sacrificing ourselves in the process, we need to change the way we have always done it. My name is Dr. Megan Walker. Inactive. I stepped away from practice a year ago so I could spend more time exploring these ideas with all of you. I am more committed to my mission than the model in which that happens. And I want to hear from you. If you're a practitioner curious about how we can continue to have this conversation, curious about what this might look like in your own practice, I would encourage you to come and hang out with us in our Clinician Business Labs community. And join me in the same time and same place this time next week as we hand you off to episode 213. Have an awesome week, everybody.